Of Ways and Means Committee, apologize for being half hour late starting today. The Senate floor session went on an extra long time. Spent too much time on the Ten Commandments yesterday, so we made up for it today. Appreciate you coming, and we'll start as a subcommittee. And what I would like to do, we are scheduled to have hearings tomorrow starting at 1 o'clock, and I'm going to be set up if there's more than enough people. I will go beyond 3 o'clock on tomorrow. But so for today, if you would please limit your testimony to 5 minutes, and then if there's time today before 3 o'clock and everyone has spoken, why, we'll come back to you again if some things occurred to you that weren't talked about. And so I do have some scheduled appointments for at 2 o'clock and 2:10. So we'll start at the head of the list. And Michael Bailey, please, are you available? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michael Bailey. I am from Portland. I have two daughters in Portland Public Schools. One is a talented and gifted program student, and one is in special education. I am the program manager for the Community Partnerships, which is a project of the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, as mm-hmm. Chair knows. We are an organization of about 10,000 Oregon families, individuals, and interested others working on issues important to people with developmental disabilities. There are a couple of matters, Mr. Chairman, that I would like to bring to the committee's attention today.
Please.
I hope that each of you understand that the regional programs which provide technical assistance to school districts have been flat funded for a good number of years. To at this point cut $5.5 million from those programs is very near to eliminating them. There are state and federal laws that guarantee a certain level of educational service for eligible persons in special education. My discussion with the director of the Multnomah Educational Service District, for example, tells me that the Columbia Regional Program will be cut from 14.5 FTE autism experts, autism consultants, to 2. The constituency that I serve in my profession and the parents who call me are frantic at the explosion in the number of children with autism, the amount of diagnosis, but rather than have an increase in service, we're looking at some very dramatic decreases in service. Mr. Chairman, you and I know each other. You know that I am not here to question the hard work and commitment of anyone. I simply bring this to your attention as I believe to be a potential serious consequences to the state. The other issue, which is a little more arcane, is the question of the $37 million additional dollars that are coming to Oregon from the federal government as an IDEA match. Ever since Congress enacted the Education of the Handicapped Act some 27 years ago, Congress has failed in its commitment to share the cost of special education with the states. Parents all over the country made that our number one priority, to go to Congress and to visit Capitol Hill and do what we needed to do to get additional dollars to help states with the cost of special education services. In the waning days of the last Congress, Congress did do that. They drastically increased it, and that's the reason there's $38 million. This is part of the what is called the federal contribution. There is, of course, a federal maintenance of effort regulation, which all of us who participated in this process in Congress believed and were told would prohibit the commingling of those dollars with general fund, with state general fund dollars. Now, I know we have a lot of lawyers in this world, and there could be differences of opinion about that. I worry about the confidence that people have in the future of public education. We are committed to collaborative work. We are committed to being involved in the system in a positive way. But I will tell you that the parents that worked hard to get that money feel a little bit double-crossed to find out that it's going to go into what should be covered by general fund dollars. It's really hard for me to understand how we have a $5 billion K-12 education commitment to general fund dollars and supplant it using our what we regard, rightly or wrongly, as our money that we got from Congress, and it should be used in addition to $5.2 billion to help families in Oregon. We're all very concerned. There's a lot of people here. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee would have now or in future.
Thank you, Michael. That's excellent testimony. And Representative Schrader and Representative Winters, as you know, were on the Human Services Committee when you appeared. I believe, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, and that was good testimony. Questions or comments for Michael? Thank you. We will be back to you. Keep in touch with us.
I certainly will, Senator.
Today is just the first go at funding K-12. So
certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the members of the committee.
Yeah. Gloria Griffith, please. Lane.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gloria Griffith. I'm from Springfield, Oregon, and I'm here to just deliver some testimony. To make it quick, I'll go ahead and read it.
Okay, fine.
I am a parent of a sophomore girl and an eighth grade boy who attend school in the Springfield School District. I'm here today on behalf of all kids in the state of Oregon to urge you to support the governor's $5.2 billion budget for public education K through 12. Even with the $5.2 billion, we in Springfield, as in other districts around the state, are having to make some serious cuts. Parents in our community have taken the issue of school funding very seriously, and last November worked hard at trying to pass a local levy to avoid these cuts. Despite our hard work, hours on the telephone, standing on street corners with our little signs that said "Vote Yes for Kids" on those very rainy fall days, that levy didn't pass. Our community sent us a message that they don't want to pay any more taxes. So I'm here today to give you the message that our kids need your help and to charge you with the task of figuring out how to adequately fund our schools in the future. I'm sorry that there are folks in our communities and our legislature that think public education is funded well enough, that districts need to budget better, and that we don't need to do any more spending on public education. Whether these are myths or truths, these issues must be addressed by the legislature, the State Board of Education, and all school superintendents. We do need to hold school districts accountable for spending in the interest of kids. However, in the meantime, don't hold our children's education hostage. All children deserve the right to a quality education and an equal education. For most kids, the only way they're ever going to get this is through public schools. We want to encourage all kids to strive to become good doctors, farmers, police officers, mothers, fathers, and even legislators. The only way we can do that is providing them with the best opportunity for a quality educational experience through public schools. I commend the state for the work it has done in developing the quality education model. This is a positive step in the right direction. But we also must remember that we're $1 billion short of adequately funding the QEM. I do look forward to working with my local legislators and school staff to reach for the ultimate goal of funding the quality education model over the next few years. And now for today, I urge you to support the governor's $5.2 billion budget and to continue your work towards your moral obligation of helping the communities provide every child, and I want to emphasize every child in the state of Oregon, a quality and equal education through public schools. It really is the basic right of every child. I want to thank you for your time, your hard work, and I want you to know that parents are here to help, and we want to be included in the processes.
Thank you very much, Gloria. Any questions or comments for Gloria? Okay, if not, Dottie Quinn? Yeah, sure. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chairman Hartung and members of the committee, my name is Dottie Quinn, and I am a parent of three boys in the Beaverton School District. I'm sure you've heard a lot from us.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm also the chairperson of Finley Elementary's local school committee. Thank you for allowing me time for my testimony to be heard. My purpose for being here is to thank you for supporting the governor's proposed $5.2 billion budget for K-12 education. As you are aware, even with $5.2 billion, many districts in this state are faced with tough choices. As example, the $5.2 will force Beaverton to cut $10 million and Portland to cut $20 million from their current programs. Recently at Findlay, parents were surveyed to determine whether they preferred specialty classes such as music and art, or reduced class sizes. I personally was surprised that an overwhelming 78% voted to reduce class size. The reason most parents gave was that as a result of a teacher not having full-time aides when class sizes exceeded 28 students, they did not feel the teacher could provide the individual attention their child required. Furthermore, without a true TAG program, or talented and gifted program, the parents felt that their very talented child would not be challenged adequately in a class with a 30-to-1 ratio or higher. How sad that parents are forced to make these choices. Talented and gifted programs, music, art, and science should be standard in our schools. A quality education will not be possible without adequate funding. Included in the governor's proposal is House Bill 5513. Which provides $200 million to help ensure that 90% of the third and fifth graders achieve benchmarks in reading. At Findlay Elementary, over 90% of our third and fifth graders have achieved this goal. We're pretty fortunate in that area. However, there are other areas of need. It is my hope that this committee will not penalize schools such as Findlay by withholding funding. It is my hope and suggestion that if schools are achieving benchmarks in reading, that the funding may be used in other areas. Please allow for flexibility based on schools' individual needs. Please pass House Bill 5513. My only disappointment related to moving from Illinois to Oregon 3.5 years ago has been with the quality of education my children have received. Class size in my previous district did not exceed 28 students per teacher, without the teacher being guaranteed a full-time aide. In the event that portables were necessary, there was a limit on the amount of time a portable could be on the premise of the school. It was 2 years. If a portable was needed for over 2 years, the school was forced to make an addition. There were designated classes for the top 5% of students, which provided them with enrichment at a pace appropriate for that level. Middle school students were guaranteed a week-long off-campus overnight science program. That program was a wonderful way for sixth graders to become comfortable with each other and to learn additional information and sciences. That program was a wonderful confidence builder for these new middle schoolers. It was invaluable. Art, music, and theater were vital parts of the curriculum. These programs were a result of adequate funding for education. Education in my previous state was a priority. In summary, my intention here today is to thank you for standing firm in your support of House Bill, or for the governor's proposed $5.2 billion budget. Let's direct appropriate funding toward achieving excellence in our education. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dottie, and thank you for coming to the town hall Saturday at
Thank you.
Anybody have any comments or questions?
I just have a question.
Certainly.
Because I would like to know what our comparison is on our test scores with Illinois.
Well, I don't have the exact figures with me. I'm sorry I don't. But it was my husband works for Intel, and it was my number one reason for not wanting to move, because the test scores did not compare.
I would like to ask the professionals that are here, because you made a statement, and I would like to make sure that, you know, it was kind of somewhat of an indictment. And just a second. And so I would like to have the department to give me some comparisons on our test scores as it relates to Illinois.
May I add one thing related to the test scores? They do not appropriately affect the value of the arts. And so it's a whole model education that my children were receiving in Illinois that has been lacking here. But the test scores from the district that my children were in, which is a northwest suburb of Illinois, were much higher than what I've come to see in the Beaverton district that we're currently involved in. But
fine, we'll find somebody for the department. If you would report
thank you.
To somebody, the school district that you were in Illinois, that would be very helpful.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Jim Scherzinger, you're next up, man. Welcome to the committee, Jim. Identify yourself and proceed.
I'm Jim Scherzinger, finance officer for Portland Public Schools, and I have a very brief three-page handout and a very brief message.
You have 5 minutes.
I understand the limitations of the time. If you want to take a look at it, I did this little exercise where I took the governor's budget and I showed the appropriation level for each state agency out of the general fund and lottery combined, and then calculated the same number for each school district in the state. So this number is the amount of general fund and lottery dollars that go directly to each one of these school districts through the state school fund. Doesn't count the property taxes, it's just the state general fund and lottery component. And if you look at, then I rank them by order of size. And if you take a look at the list, you'll see that school districts are among some of the larger state agencies. In other words, if Portland Public Schools were a state agency, it'd be the seventh largest state agency in terms of general fund and lottery. And Salem would be eighth. Beaverton would be ninth. To me, it was an interesting list. And the question that arises from my years in Salem is wondering how much, knowing the level of the debate about what the current service level is in education and in schools in particular, I wonder how much that you in the Budget Committee or in the Ways and Means Committee get a chance to really understand what's in these budgets relative to state agencies. Very interesting one to me is if you look down and number 24 is Reynolds School. Number 25 is the Department of Economic Development. I would bet that you get a chance in this committee to understand in great detail what the general fund and lottery spending is out of the Department of Economic Development, but very rarely get into a discussion of the Reynolds School District budget. But you're really spending as much money on Reynolds School District as you are on the Department of Economic Development.
Do you have a question? Because you did not include the property tax piece, did you also not include the federal dollars in your calculations? And were those federal dollars included in the agency's figures?
These are only general fund and lottery. Right. It's consistent down the line. In fact, actually, if I were to take this one step further, I would take higher ed and break it out by school. And I think school districts would generally move up one in the ranking if you did that. So really the point here is, and this was the point of the testimony is that if you really looked at a school district budget, and I'll just briefly show you Portland's, not because Portland's any different than anybody else, but just because it's the one I know, and look and see what is going on with that budget, I think you'll see something that's a little different from what has been commonly talked about down here in terms of the current service level of education. I did, by the way, on the second page, do another ranking where I looked at the entire agency budget, including federal funds and other funds. And then for school districts, I added in the property tax. Now, I could have also gone in, but I didn't have the data, at least I didn't have it in enough time to get this done. I did not add in state and federal grants for school districts. I didn't have the data by district. If you did that, they would tend to move up some in these rankings, but you can take a look at that ranking at your leisure. On the last page, I show a very brief sort of overview of the situation in Portland Public Schools prior to the cuts that we made when we balanced the budget just a few days ago. And I'd like to just point out a couple of things. And the most important is that if you look under resources and you look at the funds that are allocated by the state, and those are really two in the general fund under what I call sustainable funding or ongoing funding, the state school fund allocation, in the current year, that's about $300 million. And you see that on the chart?
Mm-hmm.
We also have about $10 million in temporary state funding. That's the lottery bonds, the Senate Bill 622 money, and something else. Oh, the Urban Enhancement Grant. So that total was $310 million. Now, that's a small piece of the $10 million. And as I said, I don't think if you look at any other school district, you'd get a substantially different picture than this. The growth in revenue from the state this year is essentially $8 million, from 310 to 318. Compare that to 1999-00, which was the first year of the current biennium, and the growth in revenue was more like $22 million in the first year of last biennium. If you then move down and look at the cost side, the growth in costs in the district from just three places, from a 3% salary increase, which is a fairly typical increase that's been bargained in districts statewide, 3% growth in salaries is about $7 million on a $220 million base. You know, most of a school district budget is salaries. The PERS rate increase is $3 million in our budget, and our health cost increases are $5 million. And that's just from the rate of increase, and actually our health care cost increase is less than many schools. Ours is 15% in the current year and budgeted for 15% next year, is actually a little bit lower than some school districts are facing right now. So if you add those three things up, you get $15 million in increased costs from those three things alone, not even counting the utility costs and other costs that now we're finding are also increasing. Whereas the rate of growth of revenue is $8 million. Now, I'm not saying Portland's any different than any other place. I think you would find this in every school district in the state, that at least in the conversations I've had with other districts. Now, I understand the situation that the state is in. I understand why the appropriation is where it is. The only thing that concerns me is I sense a substantially different view of where school districts are under this budget. And so that's why I brought this here to you today.
Thank you, Jim. Questions or comments for Jim? Senator Trow.
Would you articulate what that substantially different view is?
I think, generally speaking, the level of appropriation doesn't cover the growth of costs for school districts.
Even though we're using the model.
Right, because all the calculations that you've seen assume that the temporary money was temporary and is not included in the base. That's the primary reason. And actually, if you look at the growth rates that were assumed, they didn't look at school districts per se. They used the state rates of growth. I wouldn't say necessarily that's the source of all of this, but they actually didn't look at school district budgets when, or they didn't use school district budgets correctly when they came to those growth rates. But I'd say it's primarily because of the loss of temporary funding is not included in the calculation.
Okay, other comments? Senator Miller.
Jim, because you kind of enjoy going through budgets and so forth, have you looked at the total state budget, and if you have, would you have some recommendations as to how you might make a lesser appropriation than we might be prepared to make in some area in order to transfer it to the needs you see in public schools?
I think what I was saying was that I understand why the level of appropriation is where it is. What concerned me was the what I view to be a misperception of where school districts are under that budget. So I wasn't suggesting that, although I certainly wouldn't be unhappy if you found more money for education. I think it would be well spent. I wasn't suggesting that you go that way. I don't know.
I appreciate your answer. What I would invite you to do is to go that way. Also invite you to.
Well, that would be fun.
Take a look at. Well, as you know, that's our process.
Right.
And we're given a roadmap in December, and we find some recommendations to be responsible and others not so.
The one suggestion I made, which Ozzie would kill me over, but it was, I think the Senate Budget Committee met in Portland about a year ago, and I suggested that they actually take five school district budgets and work them through like a state agency, not necessarily to do anything, but at least to understand and to comprehend the effect of different levels of appropriation on actual school district budgets, particularly given the amount of money that we really spend on education. And I think this list of eight of districts compared to agencies reflects that. And I know that that isn't what happened, but I think it would be a useful exercise to do.
Other questions, comments? No? Thank you very much, Jim. You'll hear from us again, no doubt. Ozzie, do you want to respond, or do you want to sit tight for a while?
I haven't killed anybody in recent history, so I'll wait.
Okay, great. All right, I'd like to move to Carolyn Ortman and Joe Rodriguez from Hillsborough School District, please. Welcome to the committee, Carolyn. Just identify yourself, please, and proceed. Enjoy.
Thank you, Senator Hartung and members of the committee. My name is Carolyn Ortman, and I am the school board chair for the Hillsborough School District. And with me is our superintendent, Joseph Rodriguez. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to talk to you about the K-12 funding. I just will highlight very briefly a couple of goals in Hillsborough and the degree to which they depend on your approval of the full $5.2 billion K-12 budget proposed by the governor. And Mr. Rodriguez will follow up with more specific information related to our plans and how we want to deal with student achievement. First, let me tell you that I've been involved in governing the Hillsborough schools for over a decade. I've been a volunteer in Hillsborough for getting close to 20 years, and I feel like I have the right to be very proud of our schools and pleased with the education that our children have received. I have observed and been responsible for careful stewardship of ever more scarce resources. As a district, we've worked incredibly hard to continue to offer our children those best opportunities that we could given the circumstances. We have made steady in progress in our overall student achievement, and we've made significant reductions in our dropout rate in the face of staggering enrollment growth, as well as significant increases in the number of children with special needs and children who do not speak English as they enter our schools. Because funding has not kept up with these new requirements, inflation, and the enrollment growth that our district has faced, I've also seen our class sizes increase, and I've had to participate in those same decisions that many other districts have in the elimination or cutback of many of our excellent elective programs that spark student interest and enable them to be excited learners. We've had to make the decisions, as others have, that we didn't want to make in order to focus on students' opportunities to learn the content required to meet Oregon standards. We've had to learn how to spread even thinner our resources, and that's more than just our finances. Our volunteer base is being asked to take on more and more of the services that we value for our students that the district just cannot provide anymore. We are on the brink of seeing even more programs go by the wayside, programs that are hard to rebuild once they're lost, programs that meet students' needs in reaching higher and more rigorous standards. One of my most important messages to you today is that we must fund schools adequately to meet the challenges that we as a state have indicated are important for them to have as students. The governor's proposed appropriation, including the school improvement fund, is the minimum necessary for us to sustain programs in Hillsborough. Secondly, I would like to address a particular budget issue with you. I've heard discussion and I've heard it talked to already today. about reducing the state's contribution to the K-12 appropriation, anticipating an increase in the federal monies for special ed. And I would like to register my strong opposition for that idea. I have personally been to Washington, D.C. more than once to lobby for those increased federal special education dollars. And I did so because I know that for as long as I have been involved, costs for required special education services have exceeded both the federal funds and the consideration in the state formula to deliver them. The idea that this state, our state, Oregon, would reduce funds available for distribution through the formula, anticipating an increase in the federal special education funds, and they haven't even been approved yet, would be a breach of faith in my view. It would reduce our resources for pursuing academic improvement for all students in exchange for the mere possibility of a few additional dollars to be targeted at services for a few. Thank you for listening to me, and I will turn it over to Mr. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Carolyn. Joel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ortman, Senator Hartung, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joel Rodriguez. I'm superintendent of schools in Hillsborough, and my testimony is intended to give you specific information about the impact of the proposed budget on Hillsborough schools and to emphasize our commitment to dedicate our resources to improving student achievement. As I do so, please know that it is not my intent to complain about the proposed budget for K-12. We understand the difficult revenue issues with which you are groping. My purpose is to give you factual information about how Senate Bill 5513 and 5514 look for the Hillsborough schools and to dispel the perception, if it exists, that there may be slack in the proposed appropriation. I would call your attention to the attachments to our written material and testimony. And in just picking up on what Jim Scherzinger had shared, the revenue forecasts for us that are on the first attachment presume the budget as proposed by Governor Kitzhaber and distributing according to the current distribution formula. Changes in the formula that carve funds out for special concerns, for example, small schools, declining enrollment, reduce our allocation. Those are really well illustrated on the second attachment. In other words, the very first chart that you see is the best case scenario for Hillsborough. Please note that the proposed appropriation for K-12 allows a modest increase. The proposed formula revenue only would give us no increase per ADNW next year. The current service level budget would give us a 1.4% per ADNW increase, of which we would be obligated to invest most in school improvement activities. The maximum level proposed, including the full school improvement fund, gives us a little over 3% increase per ADNW. We have a history of investing the greatest possible portion of our revenue in direct instruction at the school level. Central management costs comprise less than 2% of our people costs. We ran out of options for non-instructional reduction several years ago, and I think Attachment 3 pretty well explains the kind of distribution of revenue that we have. Inflation costs beyond our control, specifically rising energy costs, are a major consideration for budgets in the next biennium. Rapid enrollment growth and associated costs for portable classrooms, non-bondable equipment for new schools, additional buses, and other extraordinary costs of growth not addressed within the distribution formula are important costs for us. We are located in one of the lowest funded ESDs in Oregon, so we must use our formula dollars to pay for required special education and other services that many districts receive as ESD services. In summary, anything less than the full $5.2146 billion appropriation will require significant cuts in Hillsborough. Even given the full appropriation, we will not be able to invest in many of the priorities of our district's strategic plan, and we will be required to reduce or eliminate some current services in order to make the required investments for school improvement, and we're committed to do so. The final attachment in the materials we've prepared for you is a list of major investments targeted at getting at least 90% of students in grades 3 and 5 to benchmark in reading and math and to further reduce our dropout rate, especially among Latino students. None of these investments will be funded with new money, as you can see from the chart. Rather, they represent a continuation of our focus on improved student results and changes in how we use our staff, time, and other resources. We will propose these investments to our budget committee later this month, contingent upon legislative approval of the proposed K-12 budget. Thank you for hearing our testimony. Both Ms. Ortman and I would be most pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you. I really appreciate this material and your delivery of it. Joe, on the page 4 of your attachments, school improvement investments, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it of you so I get it on the record. And if Senator Evelle Gordley was here, this is a question that she would ask. And goals, 90% of third graders meet or exceed reading benchmarks by 2003. What's your intentions or what are your goals for the 10% that are not included in the 90%?
If you look at that same sheet, you'll see some things regarding some alternative learning environments and options for students. In just above that, additional learning time, we've structured some programs for kids with before and after schools, programs specifically around helping students reach the benchmark. That 10%, we thoroughly intend to assist.
Thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rodriguez, you didn't speak specifically to the regional special ed programs as Mrs. Ortman did, but could you tell us what impact that act of $5.5 million would have on your K-12 Hillsborough School District budget if it were not to be in the budget?
It would be exceedingly difficult for us to deliver the current services that we're providing to special ed students, coupled with the fact that we are using general fund dollars right now to support our special ed programs because we do not receive support from the ESD at the same level of Multnomah ESD or Clackamas ESD. So we're really caught in the middle of both extremes of not having enough local resources to deliver, not receiving enough ESD resources, and if then we had to backfill, that would really present a difficulty to us.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming here. Let's see. Okay. Let's see. From Marion, is it Mary Hater or Hafter? I can't read the writing. And Asina Tocchini. I'm sorry. I've butchered those, I know.
The first one is tough enough. Yeah. The last one.
School teacher.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Mary Hater. Okay. Today I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage. I had some minor surgery this morning, and while there's a few members of the audience that would probably say I have a hole in my head because I never stop, today literally I do. So I don't see very well today, so I'm hoping that Arsene can help me a little bit. I live in Salem, Oregon, but represent parents across the state as I come before you today regarding special education and general education funding. As a member of Parents in Action, I recently attended training regarding federal special education law IDEA. The training sponsored by Oregon Family Support Network also had parent advocates from across the state involved. From this training, I not only gathered information about IDEA, but also the concerns of parents in Klamath Falls, Eugene, Portland, and Vail. Even though I come from a larger school district than many of the parents that I met, the issues surrounding special education seem to be boundless. One of the parents spoke about a student in middle school. He is enrolled in the lowest ranking school in Oregon. She said that while the school ranks as the lowest, the amount of children receiving special education services is only about 1%, and that most of the parents do not know what an IEP is or anything about IDEA. All of the parents that I met also felt that a majority of the parents in their areas lack knowledge about the rules and regulations surrounding IDEA. I realize that the federal government has agreed to give more funding to special education services. I also know that the parents and advocates that spend time and energy lobbying for this funding did not intend for each state to withdraw money from the general fund that normally would go to education. The hard work that they put in was to create more funding for education in general. As a parent of two special education children, I would like services for my children, but not at the expense of the rest of the students in our state. I am also a parent that goes out and gathers information from the youth in our state, looking for reasons to stop the huge dropout rate. I have spent time with young people in homeless shelters and have also been known to try out a game of hacky sack with the teens in downtown Salem. I constantly hear a message of, if someone would have just taken the time to explain the material to me, I know that I could have done the work. I often wonder if some of these young people could have benefited from special education services for learning disabled, and they have just slipped through the cracks. I will say that many of the teens that I have met in downtown Salem are still in school, but do not always have good things to say about their schools. If you take away funding that you have presented in the past, you take away opportunity for the students, whether in special education or general education. Across our states, parents are lacking in training or knowledge as to how they can help their student or other students in special education or other educational services. We are lacking the extra dollars that would allow the training that is needed to support our students. We also need to spend a great deal of time and effort to teach these students about the road ahead. They are our future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Arsena Tacchini, and I'm a parent of a child in special education. I hope your committee will support the special education by fully funding the regional programs, using the Congress appropriated federal dollars under IDEA to improve the quality of special education and funding education at the agreed upon $5.2 billion general fund dollars. My son Chris is 13 years old and has been in special education since he was 5. He has multiple neurological developmental disabilities, including cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and autism. Regional programs have provided support, consultations, and ideas that have definitely improved Chris's ability to learn in the classroom. As a parent, I feel the special education teachers and instructional assistants need additional information, training, and classroom experience regarding autism and teaching techniques. These services currently provided by regional programs are limited because of huge caseloads. Some autism specialists have 90 caseloads. The current funding is not adequate. Chris learns best with visual supports and structure. His autism specialist has helped eliminate negative behaviors by helping with these supports in the classroom and in our home with visual schedules and behavior issues. With the experience and expertise the autism specialist has, we have resolved many issues related to his autism. Please preserve all available special education funds so students with disabilities, their families, and special education staff can receive the supports they need for quality education and home life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Not appreciate your testimony. You're both from the Salem-Kaiser district, is that? Thank you. Like to have Superintendent Katz and whoever else from the Beaverton district come to the table, please. Good. All right. And Maureen Wheeler. No? Okay. She's running out. Okay. Welcome, Superintendent. Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of your committee. I'm Yvonne Katz, Superintendent of the Beaverton School District. I come before you today to encourage you to pass the $5.2 billion K-12 education budget. I ask you for no less. The budgeting process is not easy for you or our school district. We both have to make tough choices. No one understands that better than me. Since coming to the Beaverton School District over 8 years ago, there has been only 1 year that we did not have to make painful budget reductions. We've worked with our staff, parents, and community to identify these cuts. Even the $5.2 billion total figure for K-12 will result in cuts for Beaverton School District as well as many other districts across the state of Oregon. Like many school districts in Oregon, we are dealing with exploding health care and energy cost increases. The Beaverton School District has an added challenge, the cost associated with rapid growth. These costs chip away at precious instructional dollars. Since March this year, our district has had to make over $2.2 million in budget reductions. We have frozen unfilled staff positions, reduced non-salary budgets, eliminated our alternative learning options summer school program central funding, and deferred maintenance projects. During the coming school year, we will need to cut upwards of $10 million. These cuts include teacher reductions, reducing custodial services, eliminating outdoor school, textbook purchase deferral, and non-salary budget reductions. This past school year, we grew by 1,100 students. That represents nearly three new elementary schools, according to the QEM standards. The ADM we receive for each additional student does not address any additional infrastructure and support costs, such as buildings, support staff, books, desks, and other teaching supplies. We have opened 9 new schools in the past decade, and will open the 10th this coming September. Thanks to the generosity of the community and the passage of several huge bond measures. Last November, Oregonians approved ballot measure 1. In doing so, they told state legislators that education was their top priority. QEM is an important tool to help you link funding to the education goals set forth in law. As you may recall, the QEM Commission's findings show that an additional $1 billion would be needed to fully fund the model. These findings were based on research and best practices. I support the $220 million as a first step in funding the QEM. I also ask you to ensure flexibility for local districts to apply for these grants and be able to channel these dollars to the areas of greatest need, provided benchmarks are reached or exceeded. Despite the challenges, I am committed to ensuring that our students receive a first-rate education. I am proud that our students continue to achieve above the state averages on achievement tests. I am proud that we have record numbers of students taking the SAT and scoring well above the national and state averages. I am proud of our fine teachers and staff. I know that there is still much work to be done. I ask that you help us continue to move in this positive direction. Our parents and community are expecting you to make this investment in our children's future. Finally, I want to say thank you. Thank you for the work you do here on a daily basis. Your choices are tough. I believe funding education adequately is an obligation and a strategic investment that will reap returns for generations. I encourage you to pass the $5.2 billion K-12 education budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Katz. Any questions or comments? Priscilla, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Priscilla Turner, and I'm a member of the Beaverton School Board and a parent in the Beaverton School District. Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you today about funding Oregon schools. As a new member of the Beaverton School Board, it is a pleasure to be able to address a former chair of the Beaverton School Board, Senator Tom Hartung. Today in Oregon, what we must have is will, the collective will to follow through with our promises to children. The will to create the Oregon we want to see in the future. As a school board member, I have learned that one action I can take is to move budget money to address district priorities. Put the money where you want to focus, where you need to make changes, where you want to move ahead.
The problem is there is never enough money to fully fund those priorities. So we do it little by little, not gutting other programs, but shifting and heading in the right direction. You have that opportunity now. You can set the direction of Oregon and its students. You can implement part of the quality education model, then we can do more later. But let's start now. I know your budget decisions are difficult. I encounter the same situation representing 35,000 children. Take, for instance, next year's budget. Do we cut summer school for those kids not meeting benchmarks, outdoor school, school improvement grants? What is it that we don't do? In fact, that we have not done for 10 years, that we know is a crucial piece of a child's education. And this is in a state that has had a booming economy for 10 years. I squirm knowing that we will cut our summer academies, which have helped students meet state benchmarks. These are the very same students that will probably end up as a dropout statistic, a shameful statistic, and lost opportunity for Oregon. Kids who come every day during the summer for 5 weeks to be in class working on reading and math, and who let us know when they return to class in the fall that they are better prepared to meet challenges. This past January, we had the will. We all agreed on $5.2 billion. It's a good compromise. School people knew that it would mean cuts, but we knew the economy was taking a dip. Legislators knew it would be tough to eke out that amount and to make other cuts. But the will was there. That spirit of compromise encouraged people across the state. We can work together to set the course for our schools. Give us the dollars to continue the work we do every day in the classroom. To quote Chairman Hartung's column in the Beaverton Valley Times this past week, he said, "I am focused on ensuring that when we walk out of the Capitol this summer, we can say we have done all we can do to adequately invest in our schools. We, too, are focused on this goal. I ask you to follow through for Oregon's children. Use your collective will as our representatives to fund Oregon schools at $5.2 billion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Priscilla. Comments for either person? Thank you very much for coming. We'll be talking to you before we get out of this building, I'm sure. Okay. excuse me. Lauren Bridges, please. Lauren Bridge, I guess. Welcome to the committee, Lauren.
I apologize for not bringing enough copies, but I was bringing pictures. So I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you, Chairman Hartung, and members of the committee this afternoon. My perspective is a little bit more narrow.
Could you identify yourself?
My name is Lauren Bridge. I am a parent of a child in special education in Gresham-Barlow School District. We live in Gresham. I'm also a coordinator for the Oregon Family Voices Network, which is a national network of parents and advocates of children with special needs, looking at education and healthcare issues. My son is now 14. His name is Derek. He has been a successful graduate of early intervention and early childhood special education. He has a rare genetic disorder that was not discovered until birth, which primarily manifests itself in physical and mental challenges, primarily in that he communicates using sign language and pictures. Special education has supported my son to be a part of his peer classrooms in our neighborhood school. As a result, nearly everywhere we go, in Gresham and in the southeast Portland area, a child or young adult, now that he's 14, approaches us and talks to Derek. It's always amazing to me because I'm not a particularly outgoing person that these seeming strangers come up and seem to know my son so well, given his interactions with them in either school or daycare environments or other childhood settings. I think this is a wonderful example of how our community has accepted and acknowledged my son's caring contribution to our society. And I strongly believe that in building strong communities, that is contingent on adequate and appropriate funding for special education, because our kids are Oregon kids too. And I think that we need to put back $7 million of IDEA funds into the special education funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. Questions or comments from the members? No, thank you very much. Angela Janice Holland, I believe it is. Appreciate the way all of you have testified today. You've been right around the 5 minutes, and we've got the half a dozen people left, and we'll be able to get done at 3 o'clock. So I do appreciate that. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Hartung. Thank you to the committee. I don't have a lot prepared, but this is Daniel, and I just wanted to introduce you to him. Daniel was born with Down syndrome, and the things that the money pays for that affect him and our family are things like helping him learn to walk, helping him learn to talk, helping him learn how to be a part of society. There aren't any frills in that list, yet at Pete, 17 members of staff have been let go. Two of his therapists are talking about, is it time for them to think about working in the private sector? How will it feel if they have to cut again? And what will that mean for the families? I'm willing to do my part. I work on the local interagency coordinating council. I'm working on an idea for a collaborative community program. I want to invest energy and time. I want to invest love. But I want to know that this is a state that also cares for that minority. We're not ever going to be a majority. So we look to the majority to be reasonable and to think what our needs are and facilitate those needs. A generation ago, I'd have been told to put Daniel in an institution. Now we have hope of a different future. And it's a future that I'm excited by. And I'm excited because of the dreams and the hopes that I've been given through early intervention. So I just want to echo what's been said by the other parents and by Michael Bailey and not take any more of your time. Just let you know that Daniel and I appreciate the investments that you make in us.
Well, thank you very much, and we certainly do appreciate Daniel, too. It looks like he's progressing nicely. Have they made big advances in the last generation on the treatment of Down's children?
Yeah, you know, there's an incredible study from the University of Oregon that, you know, I understand that you want to know that investments make sense and work. And in that study, they showed the ages that children with Down syndrome can do different functional living skills. You can increase, you know, you can take a year off the age that they'll walk or talk, etc. These are tested and proven methodologies, and you have some wonderful staff that are doing that work. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Does Daniel have siblings?
Yes, he has a brother who's 7, and he's in Portland Public School.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marilyn Roach, Coalition for School Funding, please.
Thank you very much for allowing us to have this opportunity to talk. I'm Marilyn Roach. I am a parent of 2 children. One is a senior at Grant and one is a freshman. I wanted to thank those of you who are committed to the $5.2 billion for the K-12 budget. I'm happy to see that so many in this legislature now understand that our children depend on you for their education and that our future depends on people in this building committed to an adequate education system for the whole state. But I'm not here just to thank you for that. I want to plead that the 5.2 be only a beginning and an absolute floor. I've been active and paying attention the whole time my children have been in school. I was on the preschool board, president of my grade school local advisory committee. I've always been active serving on committees. My son was in the 3rd grade when Measure 5 cuts started hitting the classrooms. So I've seen what we've lost, and I mourn their passing. I am grateful the state has taken over school funding so that more schools are out of the safety net basket.
but I'm worried that we have settled at such a low level. I've come here every session for years now, hoping that somehow, someday we could build, but we're cutting yet again. We had a little respite in Portland last year because we passed our local option levy. Our voters do care. But all our other band-aids have expired, and we're back to some more demoralizing cuts again this year. There used to be PE classes every day. That went early on. With climbing obesity rates and inactivity among children, that seems like a poor decision. They used to have full art and music programs, with even the youngest children involved in stage productions. The older ones had the opportunity to learn to play instruments. With that gone, music programs that still exist at the higher levels have suffered because the kids aren't started that young anymore. The arts enrich everyone's lives, and these are areas some kids shine, and that discipline does spill over into other areas of their lives. Third grade curriculum is my town. In Portland, when my son was in third grade, they had field trips all over the place to see what they were studying, the bridges, the port, the zoo, the historical sites, and everything. The whole school used to go to the art museum to see what's inside a gallery and what artists have to offer. Teachers used to take classes to OMSI to take advantage of the classes and exhibits at the science museum. When they were studying courts and our legal system, they went down to the courthouse and sat in on trials. Very few of these trips exist anymore because there just isn't the funding. Textbooks used to be replaced on a 7-year cycle, keeping information relatively current and ensuring that enough books were in decent enough shape for every student to have one. That's not the case anymore. Portland finally had enough money to replace some old science books. They were planning on buying the science texts this next year from our local option levy, but the budget is not big enough cover regular functioning and new textbooks, so we'll be limping along with the old ones for at least another year. I've noticed lowered expectations in the high school. When English and history teachers have 180 papers to grade, they don't assign as many, and they don't bother to work through an initial draft and revisions. They just ask for the paper. And they certainly don't have time to tailor work to each student's abilities, as the special eds and tag laws require. The quiet ones get lost. Counselors with 400 and 500 students on their rosters don't have time to help too many individuals, even if they're asked. I could keep on going. One accusation made of Portland has been the use of facilities, but part of that is Salem's fault. The classrooms used to be full, but I've noticed with each passing year, another teacher is cut, so the children that would have been in that classroom are squeezed into other rooms, and that room was either left empty or used as storage or some other use. It's become rather silly looking in on classes so packed that no one can move. You have to sidle down the aisles to get into seats in the back row. The teacher can't pace back and forth. The kindergartners have to sit still, and whoever saw a 5-year-old who could sit still? And right next door, there's a whole empty space. Some of those rooms also used to house programs that are gone, such as music, counselors, tag, and art. If we bring funding back to an adequate level, the buildings will be fully used. Parents who can have embarked on continuous fundraising to fill the gaps. Just last night, I was on the phone with a bunch of others calling parents to donate to the Grant High School Foundation. I have mixed feelings about this. Many Grant students have been struggling to meet benchmarks in math, so we'd like to beef up that teaching staff, particularly in the lower-level math courses where the strugglers are. But with budget cuts and lost staff next year, we're not even holding even. It seems irresponsible not to help in whatever way we can, yet that means we're pulling ahead of schools who can't depend on their parents for help. That whole equity issue is brought into play again. Shouldn't students in other schools have the same advantages? And by fundraising, we're making our schools less of a public responsibility. The whole economy and community benefits when our children grow up well-educated, so shouldn't the whole economy and community be taking the responsibility? And while I've been doing college search with my son, it's made me more aware of Oregon's inadequacies. This is not to say heroes don't exist. We do have a lot that's wonderful in this state, but it could be better. I thought we did have pretty good schools until I saw some of the competition.
I think it boils down to where we want Oregon to be in the coming years, a poor backwater or a player on the international scene. Do we want our children relegated to minimum wage jobs, or do we want them to have the opportunity to reach the stars and take us with them? I thank you for your commitment and concern and hope we can build from here. Please don't let it go any lower.
Yes, thank you. Questions or comments from the panel? No, thank you very much. And now, Kay Baker, please, Salem-Keizer School District.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to welcome my superintendent from Salem-Keizer School District. And not only is she our superintendent, but you need to know that we both hail from the same state,
That's right.
Kansas.
We can talk about Jayhawks and all that. See, just a lot of us. And I'm excited to now be an Oregonian.
But the most important question is...
She did not go to Jefferson.
Okay. Had to get that. So many good people have that are glad to ask.
If you grew up in Oregon, well, Grant is here too, so I'll have to watch that. Because Jefferson and Grant were rivals. But anyway, Kay, welcome.
Yes, Kay.
It is exciting to be here, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Salem-Keizer School District serves over 35,000 very diverse but very special students, and we are the second largest school district in our state. Last night, our board and our budget committee started working on the budget, and we started having our budget hearings. We heard from many parents and staff members who had programs that they were very passionate about, students that needed extra support and help and could certainly benefit from that. And we started making some really hard decisions, I believe. We were relieved yesterday to learn that the May forecast was flat and are hopeful. However, we would have also been excited had it gone up, but we are hopeful that this forecast will preserve the K-12 appropriation that our budget is based on. That budget that we started working on last night is based on the $5.2 billion. We would like to acknowledge this committee's work and the hard task that all of you have as you support this program and make the hard decisions that you have to. Even though with this budget level, we're going to have to make some cuts. We will be able to roll forward and fund most of our programs and also cover startup costs for 4 new elementary schools and a middle school next year in our growing population. But to minimize the cuts to our current service level, we have access to reserve fund that we started putting back money into and saving money to use with the opening of these new schools, knowing that we would have that piece there. But we're opening 4 elementary schools, a middle school next year, and the year after that, a high school and 2 elementary schools, and then another elementary school after that. And we knew that we were going to need to have some extra funding to do that, and so we've somewhat suffered and held back to do that. But we also have reduced our funds for our non-personnel supply costs and kept some of our supply departments, support departments at the level they were, even though we're building more and more classrooms. We've also taken about $2 million out of our level offices, our elementary and secondary offices, that they have used to, over the last number of years, to relieve overcrowding in different areas that comes up in the first of the year that we were anticipating, and also the funding or the support of very creative programs that our teachers come up with. Every year our school board puts out strategic directions, very much like our goals and objectives. Our first one, and this will be our third year, and that is to really achieve high standards and ensure that every child makes continuous progress. The second, to provide a welcoming environment that reduces the barriers that parents feel in their schools. We have, like the quality ed model that you have, we base our budget and our funding decisions on those strategic directions. This year, we have looked at those strategic directions, and you have a copy of those attached to the memo that we sent to you. And this year's budget includes funds for a community school outreach coordinator for our increasing Latino school population. It also includes multicultural training sessions for our staff, a 2-week summer school program for students in our modified calendar who are not meeting state standards, and credit and requirements and dropout recovery pieces for some of our secondary students. In addition, our elementary reading programs, which are a priority, I know to you, have been continue to be a priority of our school board. In our budget that we put forth last night, we includes an expansion of our reading recovery program, a variety of reading programs at each one of our elementary schools, literacy grants to help start new and innovative reading programs. And this next statement almost makes me sick to read it this way, because they wrote it that said, we've also made a commitment to keep our elementary class sizes down at 26-1. That's a horrifying thought to me. When the quality ed model says that in kindergarten through third grade, it should be 20, for me to sit here and proudly say we're going to hold them to 26 is just really hard for me to state. But that's where our budget as we look at using the budget based on the $5.2 million does. We also have identified over the last years and have made a statement to our board and to our budget committee that we have got to start looking at alternative revenue sources for some pressing needs that just keep being passed over year after year. One of those is our deferred maintenance. We have beautiful new buildings because supported by a bond issue, but a deferred maintenance list of over $16 million. And we're putting in about $500,000 on working on that. This has got to stop. We can't continue to pass over and add more pages to our deferred maintenance. We need to find an alternative source for it to continue to upgrade our technology. As we add new buildings, we're putting in state-of-the-art computer labs and networking where our older buildings, we're not adding technology. We're not replacing their servers, and we need to get on top of that. And then a third issue is sufficient textbooks and resources. We have about $500,000 every year for those 35,000 students plus students for resources and textbooks. We are now have stretched out our replacement cycle so that we can do it. By the time we do our health textbooks, will be 20 years old, and a lot has happened in that time. So we need to look at those three things. Are not even included hitting those three items in our current in the budget that we've proposed, but we are committed to looking for alternative sources there. We have heard that there have been discussions to offset some of the general fund dollars with the federal special ed funding, and we urge you to oppose any of those recommendations that would do that. We don't believe that would be an equitable solution. It would pit our students, our special ed students, against our general ed students. And in actuality, they're all ours. Some just need special support in special programs. I want to thank you for your consideration and your support. I want you to know that my husband and I and our family thoroughly enjoy Oregon. Can't understand why we don't have more and more people here. I am extremely proud to be the superintendent of 24J. We have great things happening and are glad to be your host school district while you're in town. And I would answer any questions that you have.
Well, just a brief comment, because we're glad that you're here and really appreciate your emphasis on reading. You know that's probably one of my top priorities during the interim, and worked with the leadership during the interim, which led its way to the Ready to Read and some of the emphasis on the $220 million that we're talking about, recognizing that if children can't read, then we have a disadvantage throughout our educational system. And so I'm just really pleased to know that my school district is really placing those emphasis on making sure that children do learn to read. I went back to pull the quality ed model. You know, our committee, it's Representative Hobson and I, I chaired and she co-chaired, and you are correct about the 1 to 20 that we recommended for the K through 3, but I know that you will work towards that objective. I'm very confident in the abilities in the Salem County School District, and you've got a monumental task with coming in with 4 new schools.
4 new elementaries and a middle school.
Thank you very much, Kay. Appreciate it. And you're handy here in town. We may be calling you back. And Steve Dickinson, please, Colton School District Superintendent. Steve, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Hartung. committee members. Got coming around to you just a two-page bullet item about some things that dramatically affect us in the Colton School District. You've heard from, I think the smallest community you've heard from so far today is Springfield. We're just slightly smaller than Springfield. We have 800 students, K through 12, and proud to be a host of one of just six 21st new century schools for development of certificate advanced mastery programs in Oregon. So that's on the high school side of it. Also, happy to be able to say that in year 2000, our third graders scored 92, 94, and 96% in, get the order right, writing, math, and reading. So we feel like we're working very diligently to meet the terms of the 21st Century Schools Act. So the first portion that I've got on there is what the quote, current service level does for Colton School District. This year, or for next year, we've already made these cuts. One elementary teacher, one elementary counselor, school psychologist, one middle school teacher, a half a maintenance specialist, and a 0.6 FTE attendance secretary. And you say, well, three teachers, you know, that's not all that bad. That's 7% of our teaching workforce that's being cut from our budget. This is the third consecutive legislative session that I've been down here to talk about the fact that current service level does not mean current service level. It means cuts. What can you do at this point in time in this session to minimize the effect on Colton School District and other similar small school districts with small schools? First, as you've heard over and over, maintain the $5.2 million K through 12 budget. A second one that you haven't heard much about yet today anyway is supporting Senate Bill 519A. That provides an additional $4.5 million for districts containing small high schools. And for Colton School District, that means about $50,000. And I'll give you a percentage stat on that as I close. This is the only adjustment in the state school fund formula that has the endorsement of the Oregon Oregon School Administrative Executive Group, which is made up of large, medium, and small district superintendents. second, and really important to us, I think, because it's law, is supporting House Bill 2300 that provides for local option equalization grants. We're one of only 14 districts in the state who have been successful in passing a local option levy, and we specified returning art and music teaching to our schools. We haven't had an art or a music teacher in our schools for the last 6 years, so we're really happy to be bringing those people back, but certainly you can understand the political problem we have when we're cutting classroom teachers as we're adding music and art back. But the local option equalization grant is required by Measure 1, passed by the voters in November of 2000. Only five of the 14 districts who have passed that actually qualify for equalization money based upon the formula. So the cost for current implementation of this law is less than $375,000. And again, you'll hear about special education issues if you turn to the second page. Special education costs in Colton and all other school districts, this isn't limited to small districts, this is the plight of everyone, do not include the increase in federal special education money estimated at $38 million inside the $5.2 billion and reduce the state funding by that amount. It's about time that the federal government started meeting their legal responsibility to fund special education, although it's a real misnomer when they talk in the federal law about full funding of special education and then talk about funding at 40% level and then face the reality that they've been funding at 11% level. If the legislature does take this funding, put it inside the formula, and then remove general funds, then of course school districts see no net change in their funding picture. So when the federal government's finally starting to move toward meeting its commitment, it doesn't allow us to actually use that money for special ed children. Colton's school district has one special education student that costs $54,600 for his placement. This is a severe autistic student. We're not alone in that. The larger districts have multiple students of that nature, but through AADMW that we get for special ed, we're provided $9,500 to fund that $50,000 student. Colton School District special education tuition has increased from $90,000 to $270,000 per year in the last four years. I've been there for five. And this is just simply because we're small enough that we can't offer on our own site programs at a cost that's more economical than funding outside the district for those programs. And this money that I mentioned here doesn't even include our transportation costs. Colton School District has 14.5% IEP students. As you know, the state provides additional funding for 11%. Colton School District expenses for special education exceeded the combined state and federal special education funding by 30.8%, or $138,000 in 99-2000. 30.8%, that's money from general education fund dollars that we're taking from regular education students to meet the obligations, requirements, and the responsibility that we have to fund for our special education students. Now, unfortunately, next year, we have three more students coming into kindergarten that are high-need special education students, and we're looking at an additional $60,000 that isn't even in this budget at this point in time. So clearly, we have some issues, and you need to hold the course, allow the federal special education money to go to the districts as it is planned for by the federal government, and please help us with local option and small schools. The $4.5 million for the small schools bill out of a $5.2 billion budget, if I did my quick math after I got here correctly, is about 0.08% of the K-12 budget, but it means about $50,000 to us, which is 1%. So you can see, although it's not a very large number in the overall K-12, the trickle down is much larger to the small schools that it affects. The $375,000 at the $5.2 billion as a percentage of the $5.2 billion, is 0.007%. That would mean $65,000 to Colton School District. That's on local option equalization. That's a 1.3% effect on us. So what's a relatively small effect on K-12 overall has a dramatic effect on the schools that it serves. We're not cutting summer school because we don't have summer school. We're not cutting outdoor school because we don't have outdoor school. We do support the interim funding proposal to take a look at special education costs and funding to see what if there's a way that we can come up with a model to do a more effective job of funding special ed. We support the interim proposal on checking out for small schools. And if there's one interim task that I think could be done, and probably without a whole lot of money from the budget, is since current service level becomes the ceiling for funding in K-12, since current service level, as you hear over and over and over from districts large, medium, and small, does not meet current service level, why not do an interim task force on determining what the current service level formula ought to be so that the first budget that comes to you becomes the budget that is really a current service level funding. I find it an interesting dilemma that we have in the 21st Century Schools Act, where we talk about world-class education for our students. And yet, when we sit here talk about funding, we talk about adequate funding for education. It just isn't going to match ever. Thank you, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions or comments? Appreciate your testimony. Yes. Oh, excuse me.
Thank you.
Representative Watson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your testimony, Steve. I want to ask you the question about supplanting with the federal funds, because you answered that quite well. But I would like to ask you the same question that I asked Joe in regard to the $5.5 million for the regional programs and the impact that would have on your special ed or your budget if that were to be deleted?
Well, I'm not absolutely certain of that yet, Representative Hobson. We don't get much of Columbia Regional support at our school district, a little bit on-site, a little bit of consulting, but no direct services. However, our $50,000 student is tuitioned into the Multnomah ESD program, and I believe that that has significant funding from Columbia Regional. And we also have a student in a deaf program at Sunnyside that I also believe is a Columbia Regional program. If we have to take over, and that costs us about $16,000, if we were to have to take over even more funding than when we're already tuitioning in for those, that would be pretty devastating to us. But I haven't seen the figures on our out-of-district tuition students, only on what would happen to us within our district, which for us is not really significant. We don't have a lot of hours. But I do know that regional programs are important, and anything that comes out of regionals or ESDs, we end up paying for anyway because the need for service doesn't stop.
Okay. Questions?
Yes. Representative Smith.
Oh, ask me one I can't answer now.
No, you'll be able to answer this. Steve is from my district, by the way. Colton. So I live just a short ways from Colton, so I'm very familiar with their situation. The question I have for you, however, is you fought really hard to get your local option passed in the Colton School District. In the first election, it failed by just a handful of votes, and then it passed because you really educated the voters well. And that local option was to hire a music and art teacher and what else, a PE teacher?
Any money left over, depending upon the level of experience teacher we hired, if there was any money left over, we would use that to add to the Class Size Reduction Act federal funds.
Class Size Reduction Act. Okay. My point is you have those people in place now, but because of you have a shortfall, you're having to lay off other teachers.
Correct.
So how is the public in general, your patrons of your district, looking at that? What are they telling you?
Well, I didn't have a happy march when we started our budget committee hearings, and there's a lot of angst, and we've had tremendous amount of people showing up to our budget subcommittee meetings and our budget committee meetings because we're small enough, we do go through line item by line item with the entire public on our budget. But because of that, they've realized that over the last two legislative session years of funding, we have as much as possible avoided cutting personnel, and we've cut everything else down. That the realism is personnel is gone, and the realism is, and they understand that music and art is coming on, but we don't have enough to fund other teachers. There was certainly a lot of talk about why not cut some administration, and that was quite a discussion. We have four administrators, a principal in each building and myself.
And do you have a secretary?
Yes.
And that's about it, isn't it?
Well, I'm the special ed director and personnel director. Our elementary principal is the technology director. Our middle school principal is the curriculum director. Our high school principal is federal programs and drug and alcohol and TAG. We share those responsibilities. It's part of the fun of being a small school. There's always several lists.
Steve, in your spare time during the session, would you like to intern in my office?
Yeah.
To really learn how the state government is supposed to work?
I would love to do that, Senator Hartung, but you might not like some of the things I might have to say at some point. I have been known to be fairly straightforward in my comments.
Did you indicate that you're one of the schools working on implementing the CAN at this point?
Yes, Senator Trump.
Is that coming?
We're getting tremendous accolades on that, and we've actually got a staff that has figured out how to offer all six endorsement areas in a high school of 230. We've presented at three conferences of the OCCVA, the Oregon Career Counselors Vocational Administrators Conference. We're scheduled to present at the Superintendent's Leadership Conference next summer, at the Principal Leadership Conference next summer. We currently have our staff over in Vail and Mesa doing in-service with school districts over there, so it's been just an enriching experience.
To the young people involved?
Well, it's mixed. It depends upon if you happen to touch something that is a real interest of that particular student, then they turn on and they just go wild. They think it's great. But a lot of our students still are hanging back, waiting to see what's going on, and tell me what I have to do, and then I'll do it. But that's not different than we've dealt with in traditional education, quite honestly. And just one comment on local option, because this is quite a deal. Representative Smith mentioned our struggles to pass. We put that up in May of last year, and we met the 50% majority requirement exactly to the number on 50%, and we lost by 3 votes. So we put it back up in the November general election, and we did not meet the 50% majority, but we didn't need to in that, and won by 26 votes. So it was certainly a close call.
Good. Thank you very much. We have run out of time, but I'm going to, I'll stay as a subcommittee to listen to Carol Turner and Betty Hale, two people from Portland, if you'd sign up. And then let's see, David Williams, you're in Salem every day. Tomorrow, be okay with you?
Good. Okay, Carol, well.
Hello, Chairman Hartung and committee members. I'm glad to be here. I'm speaking for the Coalition for School Funding Now, of which I've been an active member, am an active member, and on the steering committee. I also work for Mayor Vera Katz and the City Commissioners of Portland, who are very supportive of the Coalition. And, in fact, Mayor Vera Katz was one of the founders of the Coalition, knowing that this problem is so all-encompassing of school finance that it has to be dealt with in a nonpartisan way, has to be dealt with across the state, involving small and large school districts, urban and rural, and bring in all the partners to find a solution to this challenge that we have. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I know you all had to do some rearranging, and you're even now rearranging as the time is going on. Many of you had your blue button on last week, I understand, and I encourage you, you know, keep wearing them. I'm here basically to advocate that you sustain that commitment and convince your fellow legislators to sustain it also, following the model of the governor's budget in terms of looking at where the real dollars go and the real dollars going into the school formula, school funding formula. Portland consists of five school districts. I spoke with Hud Lasher this morning from Reynolds. With this budget, he essentially is flat funded because of his definite enrollment growth and his increased costs. Park Rose, Michael Taylor sees a 9% cut in his staffing, in his teaching load and teachers, so really significant. Portland Public Schools, you've heard some from today. However, I just cannot resist. I served on the Portland Board for 12 years. In 1993, I voted on a budget that was $353 million. Now, after years of cut, it finally last year, just within the last couple of years, crept back up to $353 million. It's now slightly above that. But I won't go into all the details of all the cuts, but I can tell you that as a board member, whether it was maintenance or teachers or doing away with a top nationally ranked curriculum department, every cut continued to hurt, and it didn't get any easier. The other thing we want to really emphasize is that you all have a wonderful opportunity here, and I know some of you with the quality ed model. The more I learn about it, the more committed that I am, and the coalition is committed that this is really offers and a great opportunity. It both somehow is realistic in terms of looking at the whole child and the complexity that it takes to help a child achieve, and also very ambitious. So I'm hoping that you all will spread your interest in this and help convince your fellow legislators that wouldn't it be wonderful when you left Salem this year that you really had helped start and helped restructure significantly the change of how we talk about school funding with the adoption of the quality ed model and beginning to implement that. Finally, I just want to encourage you all to hopefully pass the school budget as soon as possible. School is out in a month. Time is really short in terms of administrators and teachers and everyone wanting to plan for next fall. And I was going to stop there, but as I listened to the testimony this afternoon. A conversation that I had with someone on a national basis came back to me. The person was Cindy Brown, who's at Chief State School Officers, does a lot of national work around this country in terms of school improvement. And I was on the phone talking with her about some of the things we're looking at in Portland, some of the many interesting partnerships that we have, and getting excited about that. And there was a pause on the phone, and she said, Carol, until Oregon solves this school funding problem, you're not going to be able to achieve those things. Oregon will be left behind, and your students will be left behind until you solve this problem. So with that, I thank you all for being willing to, at least in this small step, help deal with this major issue, and appreciate your serious consideration of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Yes, Senator Troll.
Carol, before you go away, I certainly agree with you. We need to find some way to stabilize funding at an adequate level for schools and for all of education, and indeed for the entire budget. We don't seem to be able to do that, and I notice that the initiative season is approaching again, and those folks are going to be out there with one proposal after another that takes away funding for everything that we do. And so it's too bad that we have to do this, but I think all of us who want good schools and good state services have got to mobilize to be active and to make sure that we don't make bad decisions in November that affect the next legislative session.
Yes. The way that we don't. Absolutely, and the coalition will be there to help be part of that conversation. So, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Senator Hartung and members of the committee. My name is Betty Hale, and I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm in the David Douglas School District. And I'm the mother of a 13-year-old daughter, Sarah, who has pictures on there, and she has the diagnosis of autism and developmental delay. I'm extremely concerned about the proposed cuts of $5.5 million to the regional programs. As you know, the number of children in Oregon being diagnosed with autism is growing exponentially. I pulled this off of the website for the Department of Education. In 1988, there were 218 kids diagnosed with autism, and 10 years later, it's 2,331, so it's going way up. And don't know why, but to cut $5.5 million when the rates are going up seems really kind of dangerous. And one of the things that I'm concerned about is that it puts our state at risk for multiple lawsuits, federal and state, by parents with children with disabilities. I'm one of those parents, part of the problem. So far this year, I have filed 2 complaints with the Office of Civil Rights, the Fed people in Seattle, and 2 complaints with the Department of Education in Oregon, very, very reluctantly. We do this so that the law is followed. It's kind of interesting. I was looking on the website of the Oregon Department of Education, and for their statistics from 1997 to 2000, of the due process hearings, they found that 32% or nearly a third of all the due process hearings were due to students with autism spectrum disorder. And so if you're looking at those kind of cuts, and 33% of them are, filed by parents with children with autism, it doesn't seem like it would be a great way to cut, because you may risk spending more for lawyers than you would for some of the teachers and the autism consultants. My daughter has really received a lot of value from her Columbia Regional Autism Consultant. And the primary value is it's hard to find teachers nowadays. It's very hard to find special ed teachers. Last year at David Douglas School District, the teacher that she had in the last school year graduated in June, was hired in August, and had never taught a day in her life and, started in special ed. And that was tremendously difficult. And the Columbia Regional Autism person was able to come in and do some education. This year, this is the teacher's second year of teaching. She's only had one kid with autism. She wasn't following the IEP and didn't kind of really understand. And it took the autism consultant in to kind of really train the teacher, and that was needed. Next year, we're looking at a teacher that this is her first year teaching. So it's extremely difficult.
those teachers need consultants. They need people to kind of work with them and teach them the ropes. I understand that some of the theory on cutting the autism is that the consultants don't do direct care, whereas some of the other services in regional do. But these, you know, teaching the teachers is critical if the students are going to, you know, reap the benefits of that product. This fall, my daughter's IEP calls for a behavior analysis by the autism consultant, and I can promise you that if the cuts happen and, you know, they cut those 15 people and that doesn't happen, you know, I have the template on my computer and I'll be like zipping off another letter to Stan Bunn. And sorry to say that, but it's just, it's really kind of getting dangerously low, and it's expensive to hire those folks, the lawyers and all that. So that's just about all I had to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? No? Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
I will close the public hearing on 5513 and 5514, and if there's no other business to come before the committee, we are...